Oh, snap.
So hopefully this one doesn't have a lot of like pops and clicks on it.
I claim full responsibility for being the audio shitbag on our first version.
It was all over the place. Like, this is a re-record, and I'm going to just break the fourth wall saying that normally, actually right now is when I usually release the podcast, but yesterday's was just so bad that we had to find another time to record it. So if you're listening to it, thank you. Otherwise, how are you hearing my voice right now? It's kind of weird if you think about it.
I was going to say, good one there, JJ. That makes a lot of sense to people listening.
Just such a perfect JJ moment. Well, let's really admit, I mean, that's a nice cover-up story. The audio wasn't working, but the real reason was just Paul was just insufferable yesterday. So we decided to re-record, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We actually kicked him out because he's not here right now.
Exactly. He's like, oh, Wagyu beef. Oh, only do it if it's all marbled. Oh, Wagyu. Yeah, you know how it is. Well,
oh my goodness.
I think we can kind of start from the top with while Paul logs in. JJ, you've got a new family member, if I heard correctly.
I do. As I cough into the mic. My family has moved into the dog world, and it is chaos inside of my house. I told my family that my rule was I would not get a dog until my youngest says, "Daddy, I want a dog." Unfortunately, she said that.
That's not a rule.
That's a terrible like parenting advice.
Yeah, she said it like three. So I was like, nope, that's not going to happen. We're not going to have a dog in the house of three. So she's six now. And my family finally whittled me down. So now we have a beagle. I can never remember the next one.
You said Cocker Spaniel, I think.
Cocker Spaniel, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So it's also known as a Bocker, I think. And
what is it with people and just needing to give weird names to dog mixes? I don't really get it. Like, I know people are trying to like come up with this, like, oh, well, I have a fancy dog and that it's a mix of these two. And it's like, no, you have a mutt, and that's okay. It's okay to have a mutt.
And
some
that's
of the
exactly,
best dogs are mutts.
Yeah, and that's a perfect representation of my family. Is a Aww. Little bit of a mutt. And we love him, and he's not here right now. My youngest is still at school, but it was chaos behind me during this visual medium of a podcast, and now it is nice and quiet, and hopefully we don't have random barking and screaming in this recording.
Are you referencing an unreleased podcast in which I was too gross and crass, so we decided we had to re-record
exactly.
it.
That was unprompted. So at the beginning of this, that was completely unprompted, so that's perfect.
That's exactly what I said before you joined, Paul. So thanks for confirming. Yeah, so you're in the dog world. Welcome, welcome. I've had dogs my whole life, and I never learned how to train them. But I did find out when we were recorded previously. I like that we're going to keep calling back to that. I did find out that, Laura, you actually have a ton of experience training dogs.
I do. I do. So I've been a foster for a local border collie rescue for 5 years now, I think. We're finally taking a break after we had a dog for a year and a half. That was a very special needs dog. We're taking a break from having those. But yeah, I did a lot of training. I'm not going to say like I'm as expert as a real dog trainer or even especially a behaviorist. But yeah, if you want to ask me like any weird dog training questions, I probably have dealt with it at some point with a foster. We typically had them about 3 months. That's the average. So if you can think about how many dogs we had over that time frame, it's about right.
So. Wow.
So what would you say is like the most important things to do like early on? It's a young puppy. You want to walk, you want to do stuff like that. Like what are the early behavioral things that if you don't get in there quick, you've kind of screwed yourself to a lifetime of dogs chasing cars or whatever.
Oh boy. So I will admit that we did have a rule in our house that there were no puppies. So that's no dogs under 6 months old. Just because R2 are very good trainers. Or like R2 dogs will train other dogs very well. But at some point, the dogs are too tiny puppies for them to play with safely because they get very rambunctious. But that being said, I'd say that probably the biggest couple things are teach the dog what the reward is. Now that sounds a little weird, but like what I mean by that is, so we do clicker training in this house, which is when the dog does the right thing, you click with a loud noisemaker type thing that makes a nice popping sound. And then that click is the reward. And then they get a treat or playing tug of war or playing with a ball afterwards, depending on like what they're motivated by. But the click becomes the reward, and you can then use a voice marker as well. But by doing that, it makes it a lot easier in the future to teach the dog new commands and new things. So like one of the things we were working on teaching our dogs is to lay still and let us trim nails. So we use a grinder to trim nails. So we grind down the nails. It's a lot nicer.
Like you just put that paw in the meat grinder?
No, not that kind of a grinder. It's a tiny little wheel. So the idea is that when you do the using a grinder, you can get a lot closer to the quick without actually cutting it. And it puts less pressure on their nails as well. And it also makes it smooth. That doesn't catch on your clothes when you have a nice sharp nail that you just trimmed, and wears them down pretty nicely. And you can get a lot, you can just make them a lot shorter over time. So to do that, we actually do something called shaping, which is I hold my hand out until the dog puts their paw in my hand and I click when they do that so that they automatically start offering that. And then they offer the behavior of, oh, I'm going to sit here while you bring that grinder up to my foot. Oh, I'm going to let you, you know, things like that. So we actually do that with a lot of the vet visits as well. So the dog will offer, you know, oh, you need to take my temperature. The way they take temperatures with dogs is through the rear end. So yeah, teaching them to stand still. So that's the kind of thing. So that's probably one of the bigger ones, but also just listening and listening in many situations. So really go socialize your dog as much as you can, because otherwise I get them when they're like 7 or 8 and they are terrified of other dogs, terrified of other people. And they probably already have bitten someone because they're that scared because they weren't socialized.
So you mentioned, well, I do have a question about you playing after the clicking and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I always imagined a dog to have like the attention span of like a goldfish, right? Where like when I've taken Banjo out for walks, I move him away from like seeing the deer that are in my neighborhood, and about maybe 20 seconds later, he's off to thinking about something else. Is that just being a puppy, or is that normal?
It's partially puppy, and it's partially not being in that environment very much. So it's highly distraction. Like it's a big distraction to be in that environment, but I like to explain to people that, so I have 2 border collies and they have about the same intelligence and attention span as like a 2-year-old adult, like 2-year-old child. So
wait, what'd you say?
I nearly said 2-year-old adult. I know a 2-year-old child. What?
I was trying to play off of being, not being able to pay attention, but I guess.
Oh, sorry.
That joke did not land
right over my head. That one
didn't land
right
at all.
Over
my head.
I think JJ is out. JJ is our 2-year-old out right now.
But no, so they can have quite a bit of attention as long as the distractions aren't that strong. So for us, it's part of it is, hey, you're going to go spend some time doing this. So the more we take them out for walks, the more we take them to new places, the easier it is for them to start to focus on whatever we're trying to do. Like faster, they're able to turn their attention back to you faster. So I'd say that if you keep taking Banjo, you said, if you keep taking Banjo for walks and the environment starts to become familiar, take the dog to a new environment so that it's another unfamiliar place. Do the same things so that eventually you can go to any unfamiliar place and the dog is reasonably aware and comfortable in said space. So,
got it. Okay, yeah. Cool.
It's pretty cool. It's lots of fun.
Yeah. Something that you mentioned, JJ, you said the attention span of a goldfish. Is that a real thing? Or is that just like a, is that just a thing we say?
Like, oh, like
an old wives tale or whatever.
Do goldfish like, have attention span?
Goldfish have a memory of 20 seconds or whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm sure I've seen videos of goldfish being trained to do weird tricks in their tanks and stuff. So I wonder if that's a real thing or that's just a like a thing we came up with. And maybe, JJ, you're just being a little bit carpus.
Nice. Well played. Well played. But
oh, no, if I'm more that was just setting up for that the whole time, wasn't it?
It really was. It was a journey. It was a journey. if I remember correctly, though.
I mean, it is a serious question.
If I remember correctly, goldfish are actually really, really misunderstood in the grand scheme of things, where they are super territorial. That's why you only ever see one goldfish in one like tank or whatever. Because if you put two goldfish together, no,
you can
they fight.
You're thinking of something different.
They're the ones who fight.
You can put tons of. No, they're not. You're thinking of fighting fish.
That's what a goldfish is.
You can.
So, hold up, child. Hold up.
Yes.
Hold up here. Hold up. There's so many questions flying about goldfish that I need to kind of like. First things first, I'm not an expert on like every animal known to humankind. So I will say that because I'm not an animal behaviorist. But so I had a goldfish when I was a kid that grew to ridiculously large size that we actually eventually had to let it go because it outgrew its tank. It's one of those kind of situations. Yeah, JJ's looking at me all funny, but like it was the length of my arm.
No.
Just for reference. Yes, no. It was. It grew like ridiculously sized.
Why do you lie to me, Laura?
I'm not lying. We eventually did have to let it go, or at least that's what my dad told me. I don't think it would have fit down the toilet though. But I don't know like if goldfish can go together in the same tank or anything, but I can talk about fish in general because Landon used to have a big fish tank when I met him. Those fish were actually pretty smart. He could train them to do a couple of things. Is that necessarily the sign that fish are smart? I don't think so, because their brains aren't that big. But I honestly don't know. I don't know enough about fish. Maybe we're going to find out that some random person is going to educate us on the internet, because everyone loves to say that someone else is wrong on the internet.
It's true.
So if you know about fish, let us know.
Sounds good.
Crows and squirrels have small brains, and they're able to solve some pretty complex
problems. Crows are very smart. Yes.
Yeah. Right? So size of brain doesn't necessarily mean smart. So I just did some quick Googling while you were talking, and it seems
it's really inconclusive.
Oh, sorry. I was doing some research. No, I wasn't on Facebook.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, okay.
And so Google is unsure if the goldfish attention span is really only 8 seconds or whatever.
Oh. So. Hold on. Did you check Google or did you check a magic 8-ball? Results unsure, shake again.
The results may vary. No, so the best of my knowledge, that's a myth on the memory side. But okay. I did have a question on the dog training side, if I could go back to that.
Okay. Yeah. So
I've got a pup I've had for a while, super smart, incredibly responsive. But over time, she's kind of grown really scared of people that aren't our owners. And I not the foggiest way to get started with training her into not literally dodging if somebody tries to put their hand on her.
So the way that we did it, now mind you, again, this is mostly coming from my time as a foster. I'm not saying I am like an expert at dog training or at animal behaviorists. Like there's people who train for that, who study it in school and do all kinds of things. So like they're definitely more expert than me. I'm just going to say that right now. But whenever we had a foster that came in, a lot of them are afraid of people, believe it or not. Border collies do not do well in a shelter environment. Really, absolutely not. The noise freaks them out. All the activity gets them too wound up and they can't like relax. And then there's people who don't know how to approach them and they start getting afraid of people. So typically what we actually did is if we noticed somebody was coming, we always had treats in our bag. Like, treats were the thing with most of them. Though the last dog we had was terrified of people and dogs, but his big thing was tennis balls. He desperately wanted to go play with a tennis ball, especially anything that squeaked. So we had a squeaky tennis ball. We would carry that in a bag on our hip when we would be going out on a walk or something like that. And if we saw a stranger who looked like they were reasonably not afraid of dogs, we might ask them to say, "Hey, my dog is reacting to people because of various reasons. Can you just do me a favor? I'm going to hand you a tennis ball. Can you toss the tennis ball to my dog? Just once. Or, hey, you know, can you just give my dog some treats?" The best place to go do this, and we would do this a lot, we love Tomlinson's down here, which is a pet food store, or like a pet store here in Austin. It's a big chain. We absolutely love them. But go to any pet store and just say, "Hey, can you just do me a favor?" And like, to any employee in the store, "Can you do me a favor and just like give my dog a few of these treats?" That's it. And then walk away. They're strangers. And suddenly they're feeding the dog. And the dog's like, "Oh, wait a minute. Strangers equals food. Hold up a minute." And then they start thinking, "Oh, well, maybe it's okay if, you know, that person might have some food." One of the things we did notice, though, is that if the dog suddenly started doing that, like it was fairly quick, check the dog's ears. The dog might have some, like, if the person's hand coming near their head is the trigger, it might be that they have like an ear infection and it's painful to get petted. So like, we would always take every dog that we got, they always went to the vet immediately. So, you know, that was something that we always would look for, is why is the dog suddenly doing this? Like, my dog, one of them, she suddenly didn't like us petting her hips. So we took her to the vet, and it turns out she's starting to get a little bit of arthritis. So she's on supplements now, and she's fine. Like, she can run around after the squirrels just fine. And the vet said, like, if it is arthritis, it's really early. You caught it nice and early. So that kind of thing does happen. But yeah, so I'd say first things first, like, open up the dog's ears, kind of like take a good look in there. Maybe, as this is going to sound awful, smell the dog's ears. Because typically you can smell yeast and like that kind of bacteria stuff, and just notice if the dog is shaking its head a lot. If that's the case, then maybe it's time for a vet visit, and then suddenly everything's okay. If not, like, go find nice, lovely, quiet strangers who will happily give your dog, or toss your dog, some treats, tennis ball, whatever your dog's interested in.
Yeah.
So are you looking for like notes of like sourdough and beer? Like,
actually, believe it or not, the smell of sourdough in a dog's ear can be the sign of other like some serious illness. I remember that because so I also used to go to shelters and evaluate dogs for the program, and when I say evaluate, I mostly was making sure they're not going to try to bite the foster, they're not going to try to like kill the foster's cats. Like, that was evaluation for me. And one of the things I was told is always sniff the dog's ears, because sometimes that soury smell can actually be a sign of, in one case, it was a sign of like liver failure or something. I forget what it was in the dog. We ended up pulling the dog and putting the dog in hospice care with us so that the dog at least had a good home for the time that it had left on the planet. So,
believe it or not. Don't you feel like an asshole now, Paul?
No, I mean, like...
as opposed to when
else? No. It's a good question. It's a good question. Now, I'm not saying if your dog's ears smell like sourdough that they only have like 3 months left to live. No, that's not what I'm saying. That's absolutely not. But it, you know, if something strange has, if the dog has a strange smell and they didn't just go rolling something outside, maybe it's time for a vet visit. Just to check.
Yeah.
Now, given how many hours a day JJ wears those over the ear headphones, I bet his ears have quite the smell. Probably not sourdough.
Yeah. Nope. Gonna bring you to the vet soon, JJ, as soon as we can get some extra money in the budget of this show.
That's about time.
We'll get one of those. We'll get one of those cones around his head.
The cone of shame.
Yeah. This is our new pitch of the show. Please subscribe so that we can bring JJ to the vet. His ears are very infected. That's his sourdough starter fell into an ear. God. It's gone down.
Oh no. Oh god.
Okay.
It's weird. One of his ears smells like sourdough. The other one smells like banana pudding.
I have to say that. So a friend of mine, this was a while ago, thankfully, her husband, he apparently went to put his over-the-ear headphones on, and something was like tickling his ear. He pulled the headphones off to find a gigantic spider sitting in his ear cup.
Stop it.
So I have to now, and I'm going to make everyone else listening do this, I now have to check my ears as JJ's like.
JJ immediately took his headphones off. This is horrific.
Hey, so I actually honestly check it every time I put them on. Like I literally run my finger on the inside, but yeah, like it was all over the ear cup. So there's your lovely picture for the day.
I get fucking scorpions in my house. Now I'm thinking that.
No. Yes.
Now I'm thinking I'm gonna have like fucking scorpions in my ears.
No.
Like
a weird
thanks, Laura.
It's gonna crawl inside of your ear.
No.
It's gonna make a net. It's gonna make a nest of earwax.
No. Don't even
think they lay eggs, but I think they'll lay eggs just for you, JJ. Yeah.
Oh,
you're gonna have
scorpion
eggs in your inner lobe.
Just stop.
I hate you all.
So I did.
I hate you all.
I did grow up having to check my shoes for spiders.
Well, right, in Australia, everything's trying to kill you.
Australia.
Right. Well, and like the you check under the toilet seat of like outdoor toilets at like campgrounds and old people's homes and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
And one time I did. I was pretty young, but I do remember it, so I wasn't that young. A spider had laid its eggs in my underwear, and I put it on and burst the egg sacs, and like millions of little ants came out.
God. If it's a spider,
okay,
they're
now
not
I am.
Millions of little spiders came out.
God. Right.
This is Paul's origin story.
So I didn't have ants in my pants. I had spiders.
No,
in my pants.
No, just
so.
No.
Question.
No.
Paul, how did you know when they were done cooking? I was trying to transition. I don't think it worked.
I mean, you got laughs. I don't know if they were pity laughs or genuine laughs, but you did get laughs.
True.
And that's better than JJ gets.
True.
So, you know, you're already on a win.
I just assumed you threw your underwear into a fire nearby at the campsite, and that was your first experimental meal. I might have taken a
No, this was just at home.
Okay. That was just at home? God.
It was just at home in my like underwear drawer.
Okay. I do have to tell one more story that is maybe not as bad as the spiders in the underwear, because I don't do spiders, like that just freaked me out.
Yeah, so that's why I don't wear underwear anymore.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I'm definitely afraid of underwear. Ew. I'm cool with spiders, but I'm shit scared of underpants.
That's scared, huh? Okay, I'm not telling that story, but I am going to actually talk about another form of shit, which is, have y'all heard about the pet owner, I think it's a pet owner optical. Oh shoot, I forgot it. Basically the poop guarantee that's coming out from Roomba that there will no longer be any poopocalypse.
Yeah.
So Roomba, for those of you who don't know, oh here it is. They heard about the poopocalypse stories where if you have a robot vacuum and you have a dog, maybe there's an accident and then the robot decides to smear everything all over your entire floor. This apparently has happened, quote, a lot. And that's from Roomba, from iRobot, saying this happens a lot. So now with one of the latest Roombas, they have an AI that is backed by the pet owner official promise, P-O-O-P, that guarantees the new Roomba won't run over pet waste, and they will replace replace any of this new version that doesn't avoid solid pet waste.
Solid's not the worry.
You still have to clean that shit up.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, like,
at
what point is it a solid versus a liquid?
Well, I think there's science that can tell us that, Paul.
I was going to ask, like, when does this go to court? Where that question is going to have to be answered.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. And then
I do know know that one of my favorite parts of the internet is people posting photos or videos of their Roomba either having or run over poo or currently running over poo.
I just like the Roomba.
I wonder, has anyone done like a art installation where the Roomba just like paints?
Oh yeah.
Like put big blotches of paints on the floor and just let the Roomba paint and then sell that painting for like millions of dollars on an NFT or something.
If no one has call still. Like go do
this. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Go do it. Make a lot of money. You don't have to do any tech anymore. You can just go be in a kayak.
Well, I don't have a Roomba, but what I could do is not wipe my butt and just crawl along the floor and drag it behind me.
You're going to inchworm your way to internet fame?
Yeah, that's it. Yes. That's it.
Well, I'm glad we've hit a new low. This is wonderful.
I want to envision the people who sat in that conference room to come up with that acronym. Like there's probably some really high paid people. They're like, okay, we know this is what this is really about. We need to walk through this. So what was it again? People's promise. Yeah, I know that, but the actual words.
Pet owner's official promise.
So somebody sat there, just like you used to do with like your name, to do like the different words to describe your name or whatever. You know what I mean? When you were a kid?
With the different letters?
I mean, it's definitely a backronym, and like tech nerds love backronyms, right? So, you know, it totally makes sense.
That's true.
I'm proud of them, honestly. Like, it's one of those moments where it's a moment to not take yourself too seriously. You're solving potentially a serious problem of like a machine being able to recognize like bodily waste of at least one species. I don't know if it'll catch yours, Paul, but I don't know. Comparing your poop to a Rottweiler poop, maybe we just need to find the data source and feed it in.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And you know, this is just the start. Soon it will be able to analyze the shape and constitution and color of the poop and start giving the dog, medical diagnosis.
Oh, is this our pathway to like cheap naturopathic medicine in the United States? Is actually shitting on the floor and letting your Roomba analyze it?
Right.
Well,
Dr. Roomba is in the house.
It's the same logic with the chicken nuggets from that big company that starts with an M. They use Kubernetes to take pictures of it to see if they're good or not. Did you know that?
What?
Kubernetes can't take pictures.
They have like some software that runs on local Kubernetes clusters.
Like all tutorials of Kubernetes, there's a huge dot, 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 and then there's an application on top.
That's true. It's the owl. It's the owl all over again.
Okay, so hang on. Let's take a step back. You're telling us that McDonald's is running AI to analyze.
I'm not saying what company. Chicken nuggets. I'm not saying what company.
You said what company?
Wait, never here, said. I'll say okay, what company.
McDougal's.
Okay, so.
McDougal's. Okay.
Yes. So they have a conveyor belt because they have so many chicken nuggets going through every single restaurant. It's unrealistic for humans to look at every single one before they cook it when it comes off the shipping crate to make sure that it's still good. So they have a system that is on a conveyor belt on every single restaurant that they push through, take pictures of the chicken nuggets and tell you whether or not it's good or bad. I work for a company that might be working with them on this.
So.
What? No. If they're doing that, they're doing it at the distribution center, not at the edge.
Edge computing is very
super inefficient.
Yeah.
No. The processing isn't the problem. It's the equipment, the conveyor belt, the cameras, the computers. Like that's a decent expense, and to only and to have that just for chicken nuggets at each store, when you could have it at the distribution point, because if you have a distribution point, you're tracking them from the whole time they're frozen. So as long as it stays frozen, it should stay in a usable state. Wait.
No, this actually explains some things. Like every McDonald's got renovated a little bit at some point recently to like look different, but they also added more kitchen space.
Yeah.
Okay, the conspiracy theory is on.
The only thing I don't believe about this.
It's Kubernetes. It's all Kubernetes.
The only thing I don't believe is that we're using the word restaurant and the M restaurant place in the same sentence.
Well,
Now, do you all know about their ice cream machines and how they're
That's
always
brilliant.
Frozen?
Yeah.
Yes, this is so brilliant.
Right? And someone actually built like a hacking back-end device to like unbreak them when they're broken or something. And so there's this whole lawsuit now between them and the people that build the machines to, you know, because it's, you know, DMCA and all the other protections around hacking things.
Didn't he also tie it into like a database so he could figure out which ones were actually working? So that he would give like post notifications?
Catch me up saying, on this. I'm not familiar with the curious case of the broken frozen machine.
So the McFlurry, right, is a famously hard thing to acquire at McDonald's.
It's any soft service, not just
okay. I thought it was specifically the machine. Okay. The point being is the machine actually takes a lot of effort to clean, and the amount of effort to clean to actually make it sellable at that time usually is just inefficient for the store, so they just say it's out of order. So homeboy that Paul's referencing figured out a way to bypass some of the safety, basically in essence safety protocols and the testing and all that stuff, because it's a machine. It's not like you have to clean it, but you don't have to go to the extent that McDonald's wants you to clean it to be successful. So gotcha. It bypasses that stuff. And from what I understand, he went one step farther, which is he actually has these all call back to a central database. So all the McDonald's, because not all the McDonald's are corporate owned, right? They're franchises.
Exactly.
So
yeah. You
can buy the little thing to say back to it and then post notifications out to people like on their phones or whatever to say, 123 Main Street McDonald's has the McFlurry working now, and now you can go and get the McFlurry if you wanted it.
Oh, which that's satisfying. That's really satisfying.
Yeah. So if you go to McBroken.com,
there it is.
Where the map is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I don't think it was necessarily the same person.
Oh.
That built those devices that's doing the tracking, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're somewhat like related. Like he's using data from that
or
those
they.
Devices or something.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, like, don't y'all just go to Wendy's instead? Sorry, like, I'm gonna come out here and say it.
Respect.
Yeah. Well, anyway. It's Wally's for me, but yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well,
I'm too much of an Aussie. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's like, I guess. I have to admit, like, this kind of brings up a different question that we've already had before, but I need to ask it. So, like, obviously, this McBroken, if it's fixing the machines, it kind of sounds like it's getting around maybe some FDA statement kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what I want to know is, like, Paul, how do you tell if a random piece of meat is fully cooked? If you don't have the FDA temperatures, like in terms of safety wise, if you don't have or USDA temperatures,
I think you would err on the side on the basically the chicken number, right? Because the chicken's about the worst possible thing, so you would aim for 165, right?
There we go.
So that's the main thing, is like from a safety perspective, you would do that. Now, interestingly, on that exact topic, we had a delivery from Whole Foods because, yes, we are that white today. And they didn't put the chicken thighs in like a cold specific bag. So they were at 55 degrees when we received it. Now, the danger zone, I think, starts at 40. And, you know, my instinctual thing is like, how long could it have possibly been at that temperature? And like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm going to throw
been
it
in
out.
The Texas sun for 2 hours.
And yeah, in theory, if I cook it, it's going to become safe anyway, but like gross.
Yeah.
And you know, yes, we are that white. But you know, the good thing about things like Whole Foods delivery and stuff is they're like super fast to refund it when they screw up. Safety tip number one is 165 is kind of the magic number where if you get it to 165, it's been at a high enough temperature for long enough that it's going to be basically safe, right? And that's that kind of number. Obviously, if you take it all the way to like boiling or near boiling temperatures, it's super safe. But then you have to think about the textural concerns.
72 so, hours.
Like, we've talked about this before. 72 like, hours. Chicken, yeah, 72-hour steaks with JJ. You can do chicken breast to like 145, and it's safe and it's texturally fine. But you could probably do it to 120 by holding it for long enough to make it safe, but it's not going to be texturally great. And then that goes to the dark meat, where you want to get the dark meat to 165, often like to the drumsticks to 185 and higher, because there's so much connective tissue and other stuff in there. And so that's like, you know, and the chicken is pretty easy. It's like white meat and dark meat is how you figure out what your max temperature should be for the pleasurableness of the eating. But when it comes to other animals, like a cow, like it's not necessarily obvious looking at a slice of brisket and a New York strip steak, which one you can eat rare and which one you can't. Mm. So looking at it from like color or other things isn't necessarily going to do it. So I would say the best way is to kind of use use a probe of some sort, a temperature probe, a toothpick, a fork, the point of a knife. And you kind of want it to feel like pushing it through like softened butter almost. And if you can get to a texture like that, it's going to be texturally fine to eat. And then obviously you can overcook it and it'll go tough and stuff again. So you don't want to go that far. But that's like next time you face like cooking a panda bear or whatever it is, that's kind of what I would go for. Aim for temperature first for the safety, and then just pay attention to the like the textures it's cooking to figure out when you want to pull it.
Nice.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I just want to.
Why are you cooking panda bear anyway, Laura?
That was a tiger. Well,
we were talking about that American Barbecue Showdown, and you were saying that they were cooking stuff like raccoon or roadkill or something, and so I was saying. Yeah, this was the last time we all were on the same podcast. You were explaining how this American Barbecue Showdown.
It was the other guy.
Oh, it was Matt. Okay.
Yeah, I was watching the
show. Yeah, I know we look alike.
Sorry.
Yeah, they had to cook deer, iguana, raccoon, something else in that sort of
armadillo. Well,
I think it was squirrel or something. Mostly things Olive has eaten. And I just want to put a like a star next to the main thing that Paul taught me early on, where like safety is a temperature over time measurement.
Yeah.
So like have both axes in mind. If you can get chicken to 145 for 20 minutes, it's just as safe as 165 for 1 second. And that's because of where they end up on the graphic. If you look up that graphic, and that is going to tell you you're probably not going to die of bacterial infection, but texture, that's a different beast and will depend on the moisture level, like the connective tissue. And those are hard to dial in. Like to your point of the brisket versus a steak, like a New York strip, you're like, it just seems to, for me, been taking practice to figure that out. I think the thing that weirded me out on that challenge was the iguana, because they said like texture wise it felt like fish but had like this dark red meat like color to it. So I feel like I think I would cook it like fish, but I wouldn't really know what to do. I don't know, how might you approach that one, Paul?
I would probably just want to like slow cook it, so like a braise into a stew or something like that. That's kind of what I would do generally with a meat I didn't understand. Just kind of aim to have it as part of like a soupy, stewy, braisy kind of thing, because that's pretty forgiving. And you can braise just about anything and get it to be, you know, tender and safe and, I don't know about delicious, but edible. You know, maybe not people, but you know, iguana, sure.
There we go.
Braise hell, my friend. Braise hell.
There's a book, by the way, just as a quick recommendation. If you want to see that graph, that temperature over time, it's called Cooking for Geeks. And I loved reading that book because it had a lot of information, like sciencey information around cooking. So
Matt couldn't even get through Cooking for Dummies. So I think Cooking for Geeks would be a bit advanced.
Aww. Aww.
Sick burn.
So what's everyone cooking this weekend?
Well, I owe Landon a deep dark chocolate cake that has espresso in it. So I'll probably be making that this weekend to celebrate. He's changing jobs, so he's very excited, and I owe him a cake. This is his favorite. He's been asking me for it to remake it again now for a couple of years since the last time I made it. So it's about time. Yeah. So that'll be fun.
Well, I want to smoke at least some part of a brisket, even if I can't do it super well. It's been my goal. I wanted to get to it by the end of the summer. It's officially fall in Minnesota, so I think I'm going to get to it at the beginning of the fall instead of the end of the summer.
Nice.
And just let it roll. Like, see what happens. See if I can learn some new tricks of indirect cooking on my grill. And just probably reinforce why I should go buy a proper smoker.
Yay! Nice.
So that's a long way of saying I'll be on the phone with Paul all weekend.
Right. Which is fine. That's what I'm here for. So I don't know what I'm cooking next, but something I cooked the other day, which has been a while since I made, was cheese and Vegemite scrolls.
Ooh.
So
it's a little papery, right?
You know what you make, like,
sounds horrific.
You make cinnamon rolls where you like flatten out the dough. Yeah. You put like butter and cinnamon on it and then you roll it up. You do that, except you put Vegemite and cheese as the filling.
You're a gross human being.
And it's not a super sweet dough either. It's like, it's kind of probably a light, very light brioche. Not quite as short as a brioche though. You roll it, you slice it into rounds, you sand them up, you proof it, and you bake it, and it's so
Wait. Did you just say sand them up?
Stand
okay, good. I was trying to figure out why you would sand them with a sander. I'm like, I didn't realize it was that bad with Vegemite in there. Okay, I just had to check.
The only way to get the Vegemite off the side is with a sander.
It's delicious though. So this last time I actually used like sliced American cheese, like the really gooey, melty stuff, and then put like grated cheddar over the top. And that made for a really good contrast, because you got the really well melted cheese, but you also kind of got the chunky bits of cheddar. Highly recommend.
I would.
It is actually, it's really delicious, like savory. You know, I mean, Vegemite is just like sludgy umami, right?
I don't think I've ever actually had Vegemite other than
I haven't either. But that description doesn't make me want.
Yeah.
Really? All right.
I had a ton.
When I finally get my hot dog water, I will reciprocate with some Vegemite.
All right.
This is going to be like a food trade-off that will eventually be banned by the Geneva Convention. Like, get out of here.
That's great.
JJ, what are you up to?
So I'm going to be going back into baking mode. I got a brand new stand mixer because my other stand mixer broke. And I got an award at IBM, they're called Blue Points. So I finally got to check, cash those in to get a stand mixer. And it just showed up today or yesterday. And it's sitting there staring at me. So I'm going to get back on bread. And unfortunately, the reason why my original one broke was I ran my dough too fast because I was trying to get it to like come off the side. And with some discussions, there's nothing wrong with me running this for like 45 minutes to eventually get it to that point instead of like 10 minutes to get it to it with it on super high. So hopefully I'll be.
Well, yes and no. Like if you're mixing your dough for 45 minutes, there's something wrong. Like you shouldn't ever need to mix it for that long. So I think the problem is you're trying to mix a like overly hydrated dough in a stand mixer, which is more designed for a lower hydration dough, like a 60-ish percent. Okay. And you're probably running at 75%.
That sounds about right. I got to double check the recipe that I have.
Right.
But that sounds about right. So,
but yeah. Paul, what do you recommend instead? Like if you was going to stick with the higher hydration.
Oh, just don't do a stand mixer. Do stretch and fold. Okay. So there's a bunch of different ways of developing gluten. There is like that vigorous kneading, which, you know, a stand mixer does, or, you know, your grandmother does. there is like just leaving it alone and lots of time. And that's that, you know, no need method. And then the kind of in between is where you kind of mix it to like a shaggy mess and you leave it for half an hour and then you stretch and fold. So you basically pull each edge and lift it over the top of itself like four times, leave it and then do the same thing again in half an hour, do the same thing again in half an hour. And after like four or five of those, you end up with, you know, a really well kneaded dough without having to have, like, gone to a lot of effort, but also doesn't need to have been left, you know, overnight to do its thing. So it's a good compromise. It's still kind of that you're doing a slow proof, slow rise. So it's either sourdough or it's a really low amount of yeast from JJ's headphones.
Good callback.
Lovely callback. Good job. Mm-hmm. That was very nicely headphone done.
Yeah.
But how many spider eggs are too many spider eggs for your recipe, JJ?
You know, I like having the little crunch in each bite. So we'll have to figure that one out.
Okay, scale appropriately, exactly. Folks.
All right, y'all. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.